So as we are coming to the end of the retreat, I would like to say a few words about the about the practice and the practice of a spiritual path. The aim is freedom, because if we say spiritual path, some people say, who cares about our spiritual path? But I think most of us care about freedom. So that's really why we are practicing a spiritual path. Now the tendency in a retreat, or coming out of a retreat, is to believe that the spiritual path can be reduced to the practice of silent meditation. Often people wonder, how can I practice in daily life? Meaning, how can I practice and how much should I practice in daily life? How much should I practice with closed eyes? But that is a reduction that is a great limitation. A spiritual path is much, much vaster than just sitting meditation or even walking meditation. As I mentioned the other night, why do we meditate? It is in order not to grasp. As many great meditation teachers have said, in order not to grasp. But this grasping or not grasping is not only taking place when we are seated in meditation, is taking place in many aspects of our life. And it is very skillful to explore it also in daily life, in the aspects that are specific to daily life. And the freedom that can be gotten from this practice of non-grasping in situation is not less important, less strong, than the one that we can get in meditation. Sometimes the spiritual path is condensed or explained in terms of the three pillars. The three pillars are generosity, morality, and meditation. And they have something in common, the three, is that they all imply a letting go. In their specific situation, but they all imply a letting go. So we can explore this letting go in those three spheres. So the letting go of generosity is letting go of attachment. The letting go in morality is a letting go of the wish to harm another person, letting go of the negative feeling, and the letting go in meditation is a letting go of confusion. So they all together, they work exactly in the same way of a non-grasping. Now, with respect to generosity, the essence of generosity is this letting go of attachment. The motivation may be kindness to give something, to make the other happy, but the action or the intention to make the other happy, if it does not imply a letting go of attachment, then it is not generosity. If you give something that you don't want anymore, then the person is going to say, oh, you are so generous. And usually it's very clear. So, but if one really likes something, but one likes to make another person happy and give, letting go of this attachment to this thing that one liked very much, that is an act of generosity. And a retreat is organized in a way that we can practice those three pillars. We certainly do give a lot of importance to sitting meditation and walking meditation. That's why we are here. But the structure is such that the other can also be practiced. The practice of generosity is here, practiced by the manager and the group, giving all their time and all, organizing that so we can sit and have no worries, no problem. That's one aspect of the practice of generosity is protection, and is also here, we could say, giving the food in a sense, because they are making everything ready with respect to the teacher. So that one other aspect of generosity is the giving of teaching. And another aspect also is the giving material thing that is a possibility for the participant at the end of the retreat. So all of us in our own field can practice generosity. We could fix a fee at the beginning. so the fee for the teacher, fee for the manager, and maybe materially it will be exactly the same. But we'll all have lost the opportunity to practice generosity. For that, the teacher, if we were to get salary, it would be very different. So in a sense, when we go and teach here and there, we have never any certainty that we will cover our cost home, which living in a city like Geneva, of course, is costly, like in any city of the world. So this fact that we need trust, we trust the participant that they will understand that and they will support us, and is important part of our practice. And I think it's a beautiful part of our practice. I would never let go of that and start to get into a way where there will be some salary. It is important, and it gives a spirit in what we are doing. The retreat and the spirit of generosity. It is very different when you go to a workshop where you need to pay. I don't know what it is in Finland, but in Switzerland, workshops are so expensive. Spend 1 weekend in Zurich, I think 3 days from working on trauma, you know, a few hours every day. It was like $800 just for 3 days. You know? So it's just another world. But here, the fact that we keep on this tradition, not because it is tradition, but because it is deeply meaningful, I think that's very important. In a world where everything is seen in matter of value, money, to protect that and to have the willingness to go through that and protect this spirit, I think is very important. It's also to point out the value we give to that, to the teaching and to the practice, not to fall into some kind of commercial activities. So that the practice of generosity with Patricia and I, we don't have other source of income, so we go and teach here and there in Switzerland and other country. Next week we go to Italy, which is very nice to meet different people. It's always beautiful. Each retreat has its own flavor. The food also has its own flavor. But I should say it's always good flavor. And that's interesting for us, but we still depend on that and on the support of the people. So that the part of generosity in a retreat, and of course in an association like Niroda, there is also need of support for the organization. Here, imagine for this retreat, a lot of work has been done, and I think it's important when people see the importance. There's a story in the Tibetan tradition where a master is receiving two of his disciples. One is a scholar, the other is a meditator, and he's checking with them to see which one has the best understanding of Dharma. So he asks the scholar, and then he asks the meditator, and they have a lot of practice in studying or in meditation. And finally, he asks the servant who is pouring the tea, and it comes out that the servant has a much better understanding of the Dharma than both of them. Because he's just practicing, non-clinging, he's giving his time there and just serving. So to say that the letting go that we can experience in situation is very important. I've not yet been to Helsinki. I don't know if you have many beggars in the street. We have plenty in Geneva. So, and it's always very interesting the way we relate to those people. In a teaching by Nagarjuna, he said that the job of the beggar is much more difficult than the one who is giving, because he has spent all the day there, you know, that giving can happen, and you just come, you just take 1 minute to give. So for giving to happen, the most difficult job is the person receiving, it's not the person giving. And when we start to see people, and now we can relate really to the people in the street, how something very special is happening in the meeting of another human being, and how we try to avoid that by reducing other people to categories, you know, beggars or foreigners or all the names that we can give, is a way that they don't stay as human beings. Suddenly they just become a category, you know, drug addicts, you know. But when we really relate to those beings as a full human being, then there is something very interesting happening, not only for the other person, but there's a meeting of two human beings. That is very rare, actually. When we go to a store. We buy something, the relationship to the person there to whom we pay is nothing special, because that is being expected usually when we take something, we go and pay. But with a beggar is different. He knows that it is not something that you are obliged to do, it is your own freedom. So there is something of the recognition of the other human being, which also come back to us as a recognition. It goes both ways. So the practice of generosity, in a vaster sense of letting go, you know, it's very interesting aspect of the practice. Some people say, but we cannot give to everybody, therefore they give to nobody. So it's so strange, how we can fool ourselves, you know. Or saying, well, they are going to drink. Okay, it solves the problem very easily. The people that are sometimes alcoholics, so they are going to drink, therefore I just don't look at them. Well, maybe we don't give, I don't know. But we can at least look at them and recognize them as full human beings. And this is very important. It's nearly more important than what is given, the relationship and recognition to the other. So that's the aspect of generosity. Well, there's a lot could be said about that, but just in a nutshell. And the other aspect is of letting go is morality. Letting go of the wish to harm, which is quite interesting, because if there is no wish to harm, there is no practice of morality. He said the Buddha does not practice morality or whomever, because there is no wish to harm. So it's only when something is happening that maybe I want to harm another person, maybe just say a sharp word or something like that, and being aware of that, I let go. That is a practice of morality. And I think it's so interesting the way it is stated. So we don't need to feel guilty when the wish to harm or to say something negative to another person comes. It's a good opponent to practice morality. If it were not coming, then I would have no opponent to practice morality. So just take the chance. Yes, I can let go of that. And to feel also the freedom that is arising when I let go of that. The question is not, does the person deserve something because the person behave in a wrong way? But can I let go of the intention to harm another person? So here in a retreat is a respect for each other, you know. Some people come a bit late for whatever reason. Some people are noisy. They were not so noisy. It was very quiet. But sometimes some people move because they have their own difficulties. So can I really respect that? So in our interaction, there is also the possibility of letting go of any intention to, again, not to beat the other person, hopefully, but just a small negative feeling that may arise. Again, as a practice, not as a mistake. We sometimes have the tendency to believe that moral behavior would be to have no negative feelings. But this is to put a too big burden. This is also absurd. The morality comes from letting go of the intention to harm. So here we have the opportunity. And also a practice of meditation, of course. Now you all know what it is about, and the letting go that is happening in our practice. So I think it's important to see that all together as a spiritual path. Again, it's if you wonder how deep is your practice, so just see your behavior in daily life. It's very easy. You don't need to ask any teacher. See the way that you relate to others, the way that you you relate to people that are in need. I spoke about the beggar in the street, but in our surrounding, in our family, sometimes some people need something, a little bit of time, a little bit of attention. Can I let go of my comfort and be there for that? And not giving it, but not letting go of it. I give my time, but really I should do something. You know, I have so much to do, but I give my time. This is giving without letting go. You know? So we get the cost of giving, but not the benefits, so let go of it. So we can explore that, and also morality. So that just to explain why the retreat are organized with this, what we call dana, this generosity aspect for the teacher and for the manager. Okay, so that's what I wanted to say just about the practice of the Dana at the end of a retreat. It's really in the whole of the spiritual path.